An advisor to the United Nations on Health has launched a wide-ranging series of criticisms of Australia on Aboriginal health, prisons and immigration detention. Anand Grover is the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health, and he's been touring Australia to report back to the UN Human Rights Council. On Aborigines, he says basic needs such as adequate housing, safe drinking water and sanitation, and access to education are not being met. His UN report is critical of elements of the Northern Territory intervention and notes that Indigenous populations are also vastly overrepresented in the prison population. And when I talked to Anand Grover this afternoon, our interview focused on immigration detention centres, which he says cause him overriding concerns.
The positive thing is the government has taken a decision and it's implementing in terms of the quick turnaround, the shorter time in decision-making, which actually is good for mental health. The problem is Christmas Island is excise territory, which legally I think is not really a good thing. It doesn't have the same scrutiny as any other would have on the mainland. And also the fact that there is mandatory detention, even though now in terms of policy, it is the last recourse.
So you say no mandatory detention?
No mandatory detention. And they have to be binding legal instrumentality, which will have a time frame and it's open to judicial scrutiny. It's very important in terms of international human rights standards to have that.
Why would you abolish mandatory detention, given that there is a need to screen people for both health and security?
Well, you don't have to have mandatory detention in places like that, because if you look at Christmas Island, in terms of non-legal issues, 80 to 90% of the people are actually being positively processed. At the end of the day, they are actually getting the visa, which is a positive decision. So what are you doing there to keep them there? You're spending so much money. What is the benefit? There are hardly any kind of security issues for those people. You have to make sure that security is not threatened, but you can do that even on the mainland. Why can't you do it on the mainland? There are asylum seekers also in the mainland.
But we're talking about mandatory detention as such, not necessarily just on Christmas Island. I understood you to say that you opposed it altogether.
I oppose it altogether because you can do it in community housing. You can do it in situations which doesn't require detention altogether.
But what if you're concerned that somebody comes from a country where terrorism is rife? What if you're concerned that somebody may be a member of Al-Qaeda or have been a member of the Tamil Tigers? You want to make sure that you have found that out before you let them into the community, don't you?
Yeah, there is a legitimate concern that security issues should be addressed. But I don't think that you need, first of all, a mandatory detention for everybody. You see, what this is mandatory detention for everybody. It's not individualized. That's the purpose of saying no mandatory detention. In specific cases, if you have information or you have reasonable suspicion, then obviously that is not mandatory detention. That is based on individualized risk perception, which is based on objective factors. So that's a completely different issue.
But similarly with infectious diseases, doesn't the country have a right to make sure that people aren't coming in with infectious diseases?
Oh, I agree. I'm not saying you don't address that issue. But instead of quarantining or detaining everybody, that's the meaning of mandatory detention, you actually look at the individualized risk of a person. Infectious diseases, if a person has an infectious disease, you have to quarantine that person. That's different because you've already decided and you have objective factors to come to a decision. Here you don't have. Irrespective of whether a person is a security risk or not, you assume everybody has it, which is different.
But in both cases, you need time to work out whether either somebody has an infectious disease or whether somebody is a terrorist.
I agree, you need, but that's why you have to look at individualized risks and not everybody is considered to be a security risk. So I think we should see if you have a reasonable basis to assume, you take time, it's different. Then it's not mandatory.
Finally, what effect does your report have? Is it mainly just moral pressure on Australia?
Oh, no. I think the report is in the context of the Human Rights Council's mandate to see that the right to health is actually followed by the country which is signed on to the convention.
But as you point out, there is no legal right to health in Australia.
Yeah, but this is not only moral pressure. This is actually bringing to the notice of the government that there is a need for that. Plus, on specific issues like Aboriginal health or asylum seekers, there is constructive dialogue. I mean, the report is just not a report. It actually is preceded with a lot of dialogue and discussion with the government.
And does the government listen to you?
I think they do, because there is ongoing pressure from rapporteurs in pointing out and making complaints of violations. I think over a period of time, whether it implements each and every one of them is a different, each and every one of the recommendations is a different issue, but they do take on board some of the recommendations. And I think it's one area which definitely the special rapporteurs make a very important contribution.
Anand Grover, Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health for the United Nations.